Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello everyone, welcome back to Rule the Roost podcast. It's been a while. I'm your host, Trunk. I'm joined this week by Mr. Sebastian Stafford-Blore. How are you doing, Seb?
I'm doing well, Jack. It's been, we were saying before, we haven't done this for quite a while.
No.
I haven't been on for a really long time. Yeah.
You've been letting the side down a bit, mate. Actually.
I have been letting the side down a little bit. I've been a little bit lazy with it, yeah. Mm. I hold my hands up there.
Yeah, good. More so than Tim Sherwood ever managed to do, so...
Yeah, exactly. Well,
You're not a complete arsehole.
No. I didn't start kind of, like, leaking information to the Tottenham way.
It's always good not to leak, mate.
Yeah.
Especially at our age.
Yeah. Well, that too, yeah, of course. Yeah. Always nice.
It happens.
Yeah.
So let's jump straight into Spurs guff. We're going to try and make this a nice, he says, going to try and make this a nice bite-sized pod. It's not going to happen, is it? It's going to be 5 hours, sprawling.
5 hours of gold.
Yeah, it's going to be our Moby Dick.
Our deer hunter,
Where should we start with Millwall?
Start with Millwall, because I don't know whether there's much to say about Millwall, but we haven't touched on it.
I was surprised by how crap they were.
Yeah, they're a championship team. I mean, and not a good championship team. I mean, I was expecting, because I hadn't watched any of their games prior to the one they played against us, but all the reports talked of how, I know it's a bit of a cliche, but, you know, how energetic they were and how they didn't sort of take in any kind of inferiority complex against their Premier League size. And they hadn't actually conceded a goal since the second round of the competition, which is pretty impressive.
They made up for it in that game, didn't they?
They did. And they, it wasn't even, you know, against some sides, you have that kind of like that 20 minutes of bluster from lower league teams where they kind of, they look like your equals and, you know, they might have a little bit of a header over the bar from a set piece. There was none of that. Right from the beginning, it was just, we battered them.
It was very professional, wasn't it? It was great to see us turning a performance like that.
Yeah, and you know what? Also, we didn't do that thing of getting to 2 or 3 nil and just keep the ball. We went for the proper humiliation, just run up the score, which I always like seeing happen. Just because, you know, I forget it's my team, but you kind of want a side like that to be put in their place.
Do you think it plays into it that the players knew how close we are to Wembley semi-final, some actual silverware once again, potentially?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, also, I think it helped that we had a couple of players on the pitch who had a point to prove. I mean, Kieran Trippier had a very good game. Heung-min Son scored a hat-trick. I mean, kind of scored a hat-trick without playing particularly well, but he did score a hat-trick. And just a couple of players that, if you sort of maintain, it's a fine balance, I'll admit. But if you kind of preserve the general continuity of the first team, but you dot in three or four guys who are on the verge and, you know, could really do with a performance, you actually have quite an energetic cup team. And I think Pochettino got that right. It was great to see, actually. Just a really, it comes with caveats because of the opposition, but, you know, irrespective of that, it was just a really strong performance and none of the kind of the weak, tentative nonsense that, like, we've seen in the past. Because previously, we've kind of squeezed through to Wembley. I remember that Burnley game. Mm. I mean, that's the one I remember. And obviously Sheffield United a few years ago. You know, just sort of, we got there, but whilst also humiliating ourselves a little bit. So it's kind of nice not to do that.
Would you... Let's not talk about Chelsea yet. Let's talk about Harry Kane. That's a pretty despicable moment, which, I'm going to be honest, as much as I very much enjoyed the game, and I'm very happy to be, you know, in the semi-final at least of the FA Cup, it did take a lot more than just the gloss off the afternoon, really, didn't it? That Kane injury.
Jam out the donut. Yeah, absolutely. I don't really know what to say. I mean, the only saving grace is that it's not going to be as long as last time when we've got an international break now. I mean, my concern is not actually how long he's out for. It's what kind of player he is when he comes back. Because when he came, I know that the first injury is more serious, but when he came back, he didn't come back as the player he's been over the last couple of weeks. He was a bit sluggish, wasn't great in front of goal. I mean, he did score a couple of goals, but he was, up until probably 6 weeks ago, he was a little bit ropey. And I don't know, if there's any point in the season, because at the moment we don't, it's not that we don't need him, it's just that every game we're playing for the next few weeks is pretty winnable. I'd rather have him at the top of his form sort of mid to late April, when we've got you know United and Chelsea and Arsenal and I don't know. I mean, it's kind of pointless, isn't it? I mean,
it's very frustrating because, as you said, he was just hitting that form now, wasn't he?
Yeah.
His top form.
I'd argue his best form of his career, I'd say. And, I don't know, mate. I mean, I kind of move on to Southampton. It seemed that the team was slightly better equipped to deal with him offensively. Because when he went down, everyone kind of republished their, you know, look what happens to Spurs' goal per game average when Kane's out the side. And actually, on Sunday, we created loads of chances. We didn't take them, and, you know, Fraser Forster made a couple of good saves. And, you know, there are other problems that resulted from Kane not being there. But I don't know. I think we're in a healthier place to deal with him not being there. But you can't just dismiss something like that.
Son stepping in for him against Southampton didn't have the greatest of games, in my opinion. Again, shining a light on everything that Kane brings to our team, not just his goals, but the way in which he operates in that position. He is by no means just a head on the end of a cross or something you'd expect from an Andy Carroll type striker.
No, of course.
And I think we tend to see that every time someone else plays in that role, as we saw with Soldado previously, we see with Janssen. Although in saying that, I think Janssen's cameo, he probably did more in his 10 minutes than Son did for most of the time he was on the pitch.
Exactly what I thought. I mean, Son does offer something. I'm not quite sure what that is. I mean, he's mobile and he's pretty good in wide areas, but... like whenever he comes to collect the ball centrally, and this is not really his fault because he's not a forward, but he doesn't have the muscle to deal with centre halves. Even like Mayor Yoshida is not like a hulking beast of a player, and neither really is Jack Stevens, but he still struggled. But Janssen, what I will say about Janssen is that he uses that arse really well. I mean, when we needed to run the clock down at the end, he must have. I haven't seen the statistics. He must have won about 4 or 5 free kicks from taking contact and falling over and, you know, just useful stuff in probably about, I think he was only on the pitch for 8 minutes. But it's just like every time we went to him, you know, went down another 30 seconds off the clock. And I don't know.
They got a bit spitty towards the end, didn't they, Southampton?
Yeah, their fans are a bit shitty as well. I mean, they reacted to the game as if some great injustice was going on, whereas in reality, okay, maybe they could have had a penalty on Tadic in the first half. I don't really think it was, but every decision, it was kind of, you know, it was as if, I don't know, hard to see it from somebody else's perspective, but their players got a bit feisty.
I reckon it probably was a penalty, but if I recall correctly, we had a pretty legitimate penalty on Ali turned down, like a second one later on in the game. He got taken out. I think it was by what's his name, the big guy that actually got booked.
Romeo.
Yeah, Romeo. He had a very good game, yeah. Actually. I thought that lad.
Yeah, Mayo, to be honest, Romeo, it's not a Southampton podcast, is it? But I remember the player he was at Chelsea and just thinking.
Oh, is he right, the lad from Chelsea? Okay.
Yeah, it's Chelsea's. Yeah. And I think the thing about the Chelsea career was that he, I think he suffered a really bad either knee or ankle injury.
Yeah.
When he'd had like a couple of games in the team and then just under Villas-Boas and then just dropped out, you know. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. I hear a lot of stuff about Spurs being really lucky and Spurs getting decisions off referees and just think, have you been watching for 20 years? Like, forget every other game we've played and look at our record at Old Trafford, for example. This is just kind of, apart from a couple of Ali decisions, particularly in Monaco, when he flopped a little bit, I don't see any sort of anything debatable that we've really benefited.
There was a great tweet doing the rounds after the game that was essentially to the effect of, for all the other fans that are complaining about how lucky Spurs are, once we've expired the like 2 million pieces of luck we're deserving after the Pedro Mendes goal.
Oh god! Yeah,
we'll
get
back to
yeah.
you. You know.
Yeah, good strong tweet.
Come on, let's you know, there's things like that. There's fucking Lasagna Gate. There's, you know, Chelsea winning the fucking Champions League when we finish fourth. Come on, like I don't even care. I can rest comfortably knowing we have a lot in the bank when it comes to luck and bad luck coming our way.
Jack, a lot of it is resentment. A lot of fans our age, particularly, and we're getting used to this ourselves. A lot of fans are used to Spurs being quite a soft team and quite a shit team, and we haven't just bought success. We've grown a core of players, brought players through from the academy, bought quite wisely, and we're benefiting from that. And it's put sort of noses out of joint in places like Man United, who, you know, despite spending £150 million again, are still a bit shit. You know, ditto Liverpool. You know, it's a little bit of that. I mean, you just kind of, anytime a team interrupts the status quo, there's a bit of a sort of an emotional backlash.
Liverpool have basically become pass it to Mane, haven't they?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, Coutinho's worth fuck all to them at the moment. So,
but this is what I don't get. For all this talk of like what Klopp does and his gegenpress and, you know, him being this clipboard ultra, you know, technical manager, they genuinely seem to be just aping a Leicester City type approach. That's all I can see them doing, is just giving it to Mane, who can be quick and score or square it in for, you know, someone else. But
I think there are times when you look at Liverpool and they look quite impressive, but generally look at the league table. I mean, not that good. I mean, yeah.
It's not many of their players I'd take, for example. Firmino.
I would take Mane.
But I wouldn't take Firmino for a second, though. And I'd take him for a squad.
No,
but for the first team.
He's not good enough to start for us, no.
I wouldn't take Coutinho over Eriksen at the moment.
No, and you wouldn't take any of their defenders, obviously, or any of their fullbacks, or their goalkeeper. You wouldn't take any of their defensive midfielders over ours. We're a better team. And I think this is it, is that sort of like, People enjoyed having their fun with us, and you know, because they always do, the big club with the flaws. And we have had delusions of grandeur for a long time, but then we're now pretty good, and we're pretty consistent. We don't really lose at White Hart Lane, and I guess that's tough to bear.
I guess this point plays into what we've raised before with the likes of Sissoko and stuff. You know, when we're kind of complaining about having spent, I do, don't get me wrong, complaining about spending that 30 mil on players like Sissoko, that we are just at a level now, aren't we, where the type of players that are even fit for purpose as a squad member are probably going to cost that sort of money.
Well, I mean, it's a difficult thing to get into our team. It's hard for players that Pochettino knows and trusts, and it's even harder to find, well, firstly, you know, a player that is immediately good enough to kind of, I mean, who do you dislodge from that team? I mean, and you know, when everyone's fit, we've got sort of Adler Meller into that mix as well. I mean, there aren't really many weak links. Theoretically, you could probably find a slightly better right-sided centre-back than Eric Dier, but he does a very good job at the moment. And how do you really improve on that from the outside without spending 30 million quid? Yeah, you're quite right.
Complain as we do about Son. I mean, if you look at a player like Marko Arnautovic and what he's doing at Stoke and how he is essentially like their centrepiece, or if you look at someone like Gylfi Sigurdsson at Swansea, I wouldn't take either of them over Son, to be honest with you.
No, I
know they're kind of different players, but I'm just kind of making this example that Son, in my opinion, he walks into one of those teams. He is that guy in that sort of level of team.
That's exactly that. Yeah. I mean, he's not consistent enough to start for us, but you know, he's absolutely fine as a slight upgrade on a Chadley from the bench. I mean, he's a different player, I accept that, but you know, in terms of what they give you, not much, but goals and important goals and assists and the occasional moment which changes the game. I mean, you know, it could be worse.
Going back to Millwall, but with the gaze fixed very much straight ahead, Janssen notched his first goal from open play. I quite liked, and I found it encouraging to see that he didn't really milk it, in my opinion. Big kind of, or he almost seemed quite embarrassed that, you know, it had come to that. And there wasn't, after the game, there wasn't any kind of talk of, you know, oh, it's good to, you know, essentially get the monkey off my back or anything like that. It was very much a case of, you know,
Should have done this quite a while ago.
Exactly, yeah. I don't think he even spoke about the goal as if it was anything significant. It was just a case of, you know, it was good to get a goal. Over the coming weeks.
I mean,
it's a good attitude to have.
Yeah, mate, completely agree. There was none of that sort of, you know, that social media bluster on any of his channels. It was just a kind of, we won, great. And, you know, it's interesting because on Sunday, Pochettino was asked in the press conference about Janssen, and he was asked about, I don't know who asked the question, but they made specific reference to that open play goal and also to what he did on the pitch on Sunday. And Pochettino very deliberately said he's earned the chance to play more, to be more involved. I forget his exact phrasing, but it was a kind of, the implication was the things that Janssen is doing well, we haven't necessarily seen yet. That he scored an open play goal, that he ran around a bit at the end of Southampton, not really important. I think very hard for us to know, of course, but I think the penny has dropped with him a little bit behind the scenes about what he has to give of himself and how he has to be involved, you know, to be selected. And I don't know, I just see a slightly, I suppose it's sort of a greater level of professionalism. It, to be fair to the guy, this is really only his second proper season of like visible professional football. I know he played professionally before he was at RZ. I think that was where came from. But he hasn't grown up as like a top tier player. He's not like Ali, who's sort of, you know, the moment he arrived at Spurs, within a few months he was a star, he was playing for England. And he's not someone that's been groomed in an academy from sort of day one to play a role in the, you know, in a first team. He's learning still. He's probably, I know he's 22, but he's probably sort of emotionally in football terms, probably a little bit younger than that.
He's probably more like one of us. You know the it doesn't really happen so much anymore. But remember in the early years of the Premiership when you would have a youngish striker come up, like Kevin Phillips, I think is probably the most notable example when he came up with Sunderland when he was probably early 20s and got the golden boot. It's almost like the equivalent of signing someone like that who's still a bit untested. I mean, Jamie Vardy's probably not as straight a comparison, but probably there's still something in that. If Arsenal or someone had taken a punt on Vardy this summer after what he'd done last year, it's kind of the gamble we've taken with Janssen, aside for the fact that Janssen's a lot younger than, you know, someone like Vardy.
Well, you remember Vardy last season when he was asked, I can't remember what it was, but he was talking about some drink that, like, he was mixing Smarties with vodka or something.
Skittles vodka, yeah, wasn't it, I think?
And it was just thought, that is, forget everything else we know and think about Jamie Vardy. That is the sign of not a particularly professional player, not a player that's grown up in the sort of the homogenized, sanitized world of an academy where you eat the right things, you drink the right things. Imagine if someone like, for instance, Harry Winks publicly said, yeah, that's what I do when I go home at night, relax with a bottle of vodka and some Skittles. You'd be like, what the fuck? You should know better. And that's weird because Winks is so much younger, but and Vardy is nearly 30. But that is, I think there's something in that, mate. I think, you know, you if you come from a different level of the game, I think there is a learning curve. And, you know, Pochettino very clearly, you know, has been whatever changes he wanted to see, he's obviously seen them. So, or is seeing them.
I've never really bought the, I kind of see where it's come from, but I've never really bought as well that, you know, the whole kind of time is running out for Janssen narrative. I've never really seen anything. For example, as a direct comparison to this, with Wimmer, you've gotten the hint from the way Poch has acted and the things he said that he's actually actively unhappy with Wimmer. Whereas with Janssen, it's mainly just been fans and press and so on and so forth talking about Janssen being out of sorts and Janssen running out of time to impress Pochettino. To me, I've never really gotten the impression that Pochettino is treating him as anything other than a young striker. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't know.
I don't know. I mean, I don't go to every Pochettino press conference and I don't go to the pre-match ones, which are sort of a little bit more circumspect. So I'm not the best person to answer that. But I there was a point at which he did specifically and very deliberately, like, criticize sort of his application in training.
Oh, really? Okay.
But I think you're still right, though. I don't think there's ever been a case of him giving up on him or thinking, right, you know, or the Wimmer thing where Wimmer is bound for the glue factory in Pochettino's eyes. And I think,
he completely is.
He's dead to him. And, well, not dead to him, cause, but you know what I mean? I don't think he trusts him anymore. I think that kind of was broken at Man City when Wimmer was fucking awful. But Janssen seems to be, in his eyes, a project, I guess, from all the noises that get made, because you don't bother to sort of, as with Sissoko, like, Sissoko is Pochettino's signing, and, you know, you don't talk to the press about what a player is doing wrong unless you want to be a sort of Sherwoodian cunt, essentially, or whether you want to see a reaction. And I guess, you know, the Janssen quotes were designed to do that. And, you know, I saw people saying on Twitter afterwards, oh, he's lost a bit of weight and he's a bit quicker. I don't personally see that. I mean, he still runs in a very strange way and his body has very strange proportions.
He runs in a very strange way, doesn't he? That's something I was thinking.
He runs without moving his arms, which is really weird. He doesn't look like, he looks a bit like a competition winner. Like a guy that, if you or I, if you were sat in the stands a while.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
And all the players were injured, and that kind of cliched, who's brought their boots? He runs around like you or I might.
But do you know what, in a way, though? I think one of the kind of parts of the evolution of Kane is that Kane was almost a little bit like that when he first started making those few cameos and things at Spurs. Like, you looked at him and you thought, this lad's not naturally an athlete. He's not really that fit, like, physically. But now Kane, even like, as I think we've commented on this in the past, like his stature and the way he holds himself and the way he carries himself, he is very much an athlete now. He looks like a superstar. And I do think there is perhaps something to that, that, you know, if Janssen gets a bit more time under his belt with Pochettino, trains a bit harder, if he's got that application, if he's willing to really throw himself into it this summer. I mean, I know it's a bit of a joke and stuff, but I think the lad genuinely could do with trimming down a bit. He does look a bit porky still.
Stand next to Kane, I think, like, if you look at pictures of Kane's cheekbones now as opposed to three or four years ago, like, he has lost a little bit of weight. I mean, he's still quite bulky, but I'm going to say that's mainly muscle now. He looks like an athlete. Like, you're absolutely right. Whereas Janssen, yeah, he's a very strange shape for a footballer.
But it's where that difference sets in with a lot of these players, right, in terms of their mindset. Same thing could have been said of Bale. You know, when Bale first came, he had a lot of raw ability, but he was quite gangly. He wasn't that well coordinated at all times. And then he seemed to have, like, one summer, or at least over the course of, like, a half season stroke summer after he'd had sort of those recurrent injuries in his early Spurs career, when he slowly went from, you know, boy to man and came back as Bale 2.0, like that big sort of indie type haircut had gone. He would, yeah, just little changes like that. And he suddenly, you know, became much more of an athlete. And if Janssen can do that, I don't see why not. But it's obviously a tall order, because there's so few of these players that have that real mentality to kick on. And, you know, it doesn't take me much to start waxing lyrical about Harry Kane, but it's so throwaway and it sounds so blinkered Spurs fan to say, but I really think the lad has that. He has that superstar mentality. I think it astounds me that there is still so much doubt around Harry Kane. Like,
Jack, that's because of, firstly, he's English. Secondly, he's called Harry Kane. Thirdly, he plays for Tottenham. Like, and he doesn't.
What more does the lad have to do? Like, you see at the moment, you know, Lukaku's having a great season. Like, Lukaku's having a great season. Lukaku's a great player. You know, he's a great
player. He's not
player.
Not a superior player to Kane.
I don't think he's a massively inferior player to Kane either, but I don't think
he's not.
But what I mean is, you know, there's this like conversation that surrounds this, because it's going to happen. These comparisons are going to be drawn, Lukaku versus Kane. But there's just this kind of, I don't know, this almost like faux sense of intellectualism around it that, oh, well, of course Lukaku's a better player than Harry Kane. You know, Why would Barcelona spend as much on Kane as they would on Lukaku? Well, because Kane scores a lot more goals than Lukaku does.
Kane has a lot more period than he does. I mean,
Kane has a much better attitude, noted, than Lukaku does. You know.
Well, I mean, I know football doesn't really work like that, and you know, you can't compare strikers even when on the same pitch. But it was very telling that during the Everton game, like, when Kane's not involved in a match, when the play doesn't sort of centre around him, it doesn't come to him naturally, he goes and finds it, and he goes and influences it. He may not always influence it in a good way, but there's always that, he's always a visible presence in a game. Whereas Lukaku, in that game, and in just about every other game I've seen, when he's not scoring goals, you don't know he's on the pitch. I mean, he's that's not quite fair, but he's not that sort of, he's not nearly as omnipresent. I mean, he's, unless he gets the kind of delivery he needs or the kind of the balls played into the right areas for him to exploit, whether that be sort of, you know, running to space in the channels or, you know, crosses that he can attack, he doesn't do very much. He scores a lot of goals. He's a good finisher, definitely. But even if I wasn't a Tottenham fan, I'd like to think that that it's not really a decision if I was asked to pick between the two. I mean, I don't really see the argument for Lukaku as a superior player.
Yeah. Fuck him. Right, let's have a look. We've had a question from at Single Malt Suds, who asks, this is quite an interesting one, is Wenger staying better or worse for Spurs? I mean, what are your thoughts at large on the Arsene Wenger at Arsenal?
I hate the way he's being treated. I find it very strange to say that, but I think it's just one of the most classless things I've ever seen. You flying planes, and fuck off. You know, flying planes is about fans, it's about people who want attention, and you want, like, you know, articles written about them by the Lab Bible. You don't have to be particularly old to remember what they were before he got there.
No.
And, you know, it's as if kind of, it's sometimes the way Wenger's tenure is presented, as if he sort of inherited this team that were on a kind of unstoppable trajectory. And
they used to finish below us consistently.
They were a mid-table team. He completely changed the face. He completely changed what Arsenal are as a football club.
He changed the Premier League, mate.
Basically, yeah, he set different trends and he created new habits within the league that were adopted by others. I get the grievance, Jack. I get the sort of that we're a bit shit. And look, realistically, for us to be, what are we, 9 points clear of them with them having a game in hand, that's unacceptable for a team that spend as much money as they do and have the wage spend that they do. That would, if I was an Arsenal fan, that would fuck me off. That would be very difficult to take. But at the same time, there's a way of doing this, and there's a way of,
I think as well, using Spurs though as a barometer in this example, if you just look at kind of, you know, if we're going along that net spend, wage spend type thing, we're a poor barometer for that. Given the way in which we've brought this squad up largely through our academy and also through these kind of just very shrewd acquisitions. I think we're a bit of an anomalous case. A better example would be, say, if they benchmarked themselves with teams like United and teams like Liverpool at the moment. Not even United, really. United have spent a lot more than them and aren't doing much better. And, you know, at the same time, you see this all the time from Arsenal, but consistently under Wenger, they finish best of the rest. You know, other than the Leicester year, Arsenal are usually only bested by Chelsea or City, really.
Yeah, like clubs with a preposterous financial advantage.
Same in the Champions League. They only usually get knocked out in the Champions League by teams who are far superior to them financially.
Teams that were pissed all over pretty much every Premier League team every year.
I don't really see the full grievance. I mean, a good friend of mine who's an Arsenal fan, he's pretty much on the fence about the whole thing. And his biggest grievance that I can see, though, is that he's had a lot of very talented, decent players are, for the past few years, stagnating and have stagnated under Wenger. Oxlade Chamberlains, your Walcotts. Players like Giroud have never really realised anything of. I'm not convinced Giroud.
I'd add Aaron Ramsey into that, mate, as well.
You know,
I mean, he had that one season and then he's been pretty much nothing ever since.
So I can even someone like Koscielny, you know.
Well, Mustafi, I think Mustafi's a good player, but
Mesut Ozil.
Kieran Gibbs, probably another one, pretty good English left back. Has like gone into the witness protection program. I don't know what happened to Kieran Gibb. I get the argument, and also I get the they pay a lot of money for their tickets, so that kind of that amplifies frustration. But I'm not having the idea that this is behavior restricted solely to match going fans. Like, it's not, that's just not true. Like, okay, there's a lot of protests and stuff, but you know, a lot of the Twitter nonsense you see, these are from TV fans. And I don't know, I don't like it. I don't, as far as the question goes, I don't know. I don't think anyone can really say what, whether Arsenal are more or less of a problem with or without him, because the idea is so unimaginable. Because, and that in itself kind of justifies what we're saying, what we've said about the way he's being treated, because Wenger and Arsenal are essentially intertwined. You know, you can't really separate the two at this point. So it's, I can't, I don't know. I mean, I don't, the thing is, you know, beyond the games we play against them and what the league table looks at the end of it, don't really care what happens at Arsenal. Like, just beat the team that they put out twice a year and then I'll be happy.
Yeah, I think that's fair enough. If I were to give Phil something of an answer, I'd still be inclined to say, you know, Wenger staying is worse than Spurs. He's never finished below Spurs. I mean, that can change, obviously. But we've seen it.
Don't say it, Jack.
No, but I mean, we've seen it. This is it, though. We've seen it many times over the years when we've been like, but that probably will change this year, but it doesn't. And whether that's him, whether he somehow manages to push, if it's that mental barrier that we talk about, that I'm utterly convinced by that we consistently finish below Arsenal as a matter of mentality more than, you know, ability.
Yeah.
Especially in the past few years.
No question that the first 11 at the moment, no question that Tottenham are more talented. It's not a debate. They are.
Nice would it be to beat them in the FA Cup final, mate? Good God.
Yeah. Good I don't God. Think they're going to get there, mate. But
I don't think we're going to get there.
No, that's a test.
Yeah, annoyingly.
Yeah.
So the year we finally finish above Arsenal, we're going to have to endure handing Chelsea the double. That'll be nice, won't it?
Yeah. No, I don't want to talk about that. Yeah. Let's leave that for a few weeks. I'm in a pretty good place at Spurs. Don't.
Yeah, fair. Arsehole. Let's have a look. We've got one from Grant Allott. Gallot 1985, who asks, do we now need to structure our recruitment in the summer around looking for players to fit a 3-4-2-1 formation?
Mate, I don't know. I mean, I don't really believe. It's going to sound a bit like a redknappism, but I think the players you have dictate the formation you play, not the other way around. I mean, I know it works for us, but it works for us because of the players we have available. And so, yeah, I don't know. I'm not sure. You need a smarter person than me to answer that, really.
I have it on fairly good authority that it's not just Guff that we, you know, Zaha is very high up on our. I think everyone kind of knew that.
Yeah, no, that's not really a secret, and neither is the Rothbard.
Mate, come on! I'm trying to be some sort of, you know, oracle here.
Okay, you know, no.
Try and make it like it.
That's interesting, Jack. That is interesting. Right. Good ITK.
Fucking hell, mate. Come on. Mugging me off in front of all my pals here.
I am. I'm sorry. I quite like Zaha.
I think this season as well, he's gotten better and better.
Yeah, mate. I think... I know, given things I've said in the past, this pod is going to sound a bit agenda-led, but I think he would be better for us than Son. I really like Son. I think he's a pound for pound a more talented player. I'm not a more talented player, a more useful Premier League player.
He's becoming, I mean, a player I would like to wax lyrical about in a more neutral setting would be Raheem Sterling, who I think is becoming a fantastic, fantastic player. And I think it's really understated as well, his progress under, as much as I've made fun of Guardiola, his progress under Guardiola has been immense. I think he's
great.
I just think he's such a good player. I really do. He's I know the instant would be that, you know, he doesn't score these sort of flashy goals like he did at Liverpool. He's not quite as explosive a player as he was at Liverpool, but
don't need him to be. Well,
no, exactly. There's so much more to his game now.
Yeah. You got, like, you know, if you're lining up alongside Kevin De Bruyne, you don't need Raheem Sterling to rip 30 yarders in every week. You just, like, the way he moves is brilliant. Like, anyone, I don't get the criticism. I get the England criticism because it's England and England is shit. And
but Harry Kane's shit for England.
Ali wasn't particularly great. Like, I mean, that's all well and good, but, look at the guy's numbers and his performances and the positions he takes up and the chances he makes for other players. And, you know, like to adapt that quickly to, I'd say of all the players at Man City, he's adapted the quickest to Guardiola of all of them. Certainly the improvement between what he was and what he now is the most dramatic.
And this, my point is, I feel that Zaha could potentially be that type of player for us. I think, you know, when he was smashing them in every other week in the Championship at Palace and had that ill-fated Man United move, he's not that player anymore. Almost, I guess, again, similar to what Eric Lamella was like at Roma versus what Eric Lamella was like before he, again, went into witness protection, as the phrase you coined earlier on.
Or Eric Lamella.
Do you think we're ever going to see him again, mate? Because I think that's his Tottenham career done, personally. But
I mean, there are stories. We can't talk about them on here, can we? But I think it's a point where you just hope, forget the football and just hope that the things that are going on with his family and with him personally just get better. I think. Mm. I think he's I think he's a really admirable footballer. I'd love it if he stayed. I don't know. I mean, I just think they're just a bigger issues in football for Eric.
But we paid £30 million for him, mate.
I mean, he should be fucking bail as well. He's left-footed. Yeah, all valid points. All valid points. But I just think I love watching him play. I mean, just like a little warrior with a boy band haircut. It's great. I don't know, mate. I mean, certainly it just seems, I mean, everyone knows the kind of the things that have been going on. I don't mean his dog dying, obviously. But yeah, he's obviously quite a troubled young man. So, hope he gets the help he needs and, see him on the pitch soon somewhere.
At D Dastardly, asks, he basically asked, do we need a cover for Chris? I'm trying to decipher the tweet. I think a point he's making is, do we need some cover for Christian Eriksen, another attacking midfielder of that ilk? I know Isco is a name that's been linked quite heavily, but...
Every time I hear Isco's name, I remember your WhatsApp message to me on the eve of the transfer deadline day.
What was that?
It was. I'm not going to do that to you. No,
please
do,
mate. I deserve
it. It was kind of pleading. It was a sort of you were eager for Isco to sign.
Do you know what though, mate? I'm kind of now. I'm indifferent in the respect that he probably would be great, but there's no guarantee that he'd be great. And if you were to sign him, he'd probably knock Christian Eriksen out of the team, who I think has gone up a little this year.
Great. Couple of months with Christian Eriksen.
I think the lad's fucking amazing.
Yeah, he was. He was great on Sunday for most of it. And he got knackered towards the end, but he his first hour in that game was almost as good as I think I've seen from him at Spurs. I don't know. I don't think we do. I have a little bit of a theory about this. I think eventually, and this may prove laughable in a couple of years' time, I think eventually Harry Winks will become more of a Christian Eriksen than a deep lying player.
I don't think that's that laughable, mate.
Well, I can see the merits of both. I think he's such a complete player that he could pretty much play any midfield position. I just think he has a little bit of... He's certainly a player that's got the instinct to carry the ball forward. He does like to shoot. He's pretty smart around the penalty box. I see that as his future. I don't think they'll ever be identical players. I just think in terms of what they're asked to do, I think you'll always have, well, for as long as Pochettino is at the club, you always bank the midfield up with two pretty physical players, because that really, it's been shown to work really well. I think he is a more of a, yeah, and he's more of a sort of aggressive passer, and I don't think we'll sign someone to take that kind of game time away from Winks.
Are you buying the Winks hype then?
Hey, Winks, Winks is an absolutely brilliant player. I know there are imperfections, but the first time I saw him live was the West Ham game. And it's quite startling, like, to see his levels of expression. Because usually, when you see, like, a younger player come in, most of them just try not to fuck up. They try not to do things which can, like, you know, embarrass them or make someone say he's not ready for this level. Winks, from the first minute of that game, he was using the ball properly, and there's no fear to him. Like, he's really good technically, of course, like, really good with the ball at his feet, very good passing range, lovely, great. But the thing about him is just fearlessness. And I absolutely love watching Harry Winks play. And I'm not sort of, right, put him in the team now and drop everybody else and build the entire team and give him the captain's armband. I just mean that I think he'll be one of the, I really believe he'll be one of the most talented English players of his generation. I don't know how anyone, not on TV, because other fans, when Tottenham fans talk about Winks, other fans sneer. Like, but anybody who's watched him at White Hart Lane or in any other game he's played, like, you can't help but think that he's excellent. One of the most exciting young players I've seen, come through Tottenham's academy in my lifetime, definitely.
High praise indeed.
Yeah, and actually, I include Kane in that, because Kane has become a fantastic player, but. Like, I wasn't initially, I'm not going to pretend that I was always on the Kane bandwagon. I thought he was fucking awful the first time I saw him, and was set for League One. But Winks, there's something about him. You just think that's just class right there.
Do you think it's because he's a bit Spanish? Do you think it's the Spanish bit that's good?
Yeah, probably that, mate. It's just like, I'm so anti-Brexit that's how I think. Yeah. Everything about the EU is good.
It would be quite funny if Spain did snap him up.
Mate, it's the Smith. He's not eligible. It's his great-grandparents, one of his great-grandparents that have the Spanish connection. It was the Mirror talking bollocks.
The Mirror? Really?
Yeah, I know. Gasps from everywhere. Yeah.
Shit.
Yeah, not true at all. He's not eligible to play for Spain.
Right, well, good. Hands off, paella hands munchers. Off,
siesta layabouts. Yeah,
yeah, that's it. Costa del fuck off. Hey. All right. And on that note, we'll kill it there, because there's no, yeah, it's international break.
I don't think
break.
There's any way to top that. That's just,
no.
Don't even do the outro, just put the microphone down.
Yeah. Listen to us on iTunes and on Acast. Follow us at RTR_pod. We'll be back next week talking to somebody from Burnley, probably. Sure, you're looking forward to that. Come on, you Spurs.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.